In this scenario, we're going to talk at a high level about the use of more sophisticated data tools. So that doesn't mean that we don't use traditional reporting tools in our solutions anymore. Absolutely, we still use OLAP. Absolutely, we still use SQL Server reporting services. Absolutely, we still report over our relational data. But one of the things that we're finding with, you know, these modern apps and the fact that we can now create and gather and store and process so much more data is that there are opportunities to do things with data that were previously either too difficult or too expensive to do. One of the challenges that we face is just the massive volume of data that we have to deal with. If you think about, say, sensors from the Internet of Things or the click stream from a massive e-commerce site, it's just not data you can put in a relational database and report on. So one of the tools that we use for dealing with massive amounts of data is a thing called Hadoop. Anybody done anything with Hadoop yet? Some folks have. That's really good. All right, so Hadoop is a distributed framework for processing data. Now, I use the term processing because everything you do with Hadoop is processing. Right? Now, sometimes it looks like processing, i.e. put data in, process the data, take results out. Sometimes it's put data in and then run queries on Hadoop. But those queries are big distributed queries. They're not real-time queries. They're effectively processing. It's go and run a batch that runs across all of these clusters. But Hadoop allows us to deal with massive volumes of data. So what does that look like in Contoso land? We're going to use HD Insight, which is Microsoft's cloud-based implementation of Hadoop, to process our mobile services logs. We get them into Azure Blob Storage. And from there, we run them through a map reduce process in Hadoop. I'm not going to go into MapReduce in detail. It's in the docs. You can think of it as a pattern for distributing work. The important thing to know with this approach, right, is that Hadoop can be used, Hadoop always processes data, but it can be used somewhat interactively. And there are tools like Hive that sit over the top of it and make Hadoop look a bit like a big database. Right? It would be very unusual to have an application where your end users are accessing data through Hadoop. Right? It's not a high-performance database. Right? It's a way of storing a huge amount of data and then being able to run these queries that are massive distributed queries. In the case of Contoso, what we're using this for is as part of an ETL pipeline. So we're ingesting the data through HD Insight, we're processing it, and then we're taking those processed results and pushing them into our traditional reporting tools. And that's a very, very common pattern, right? A very common pattern for IoT and other types of scenarios is to ETL through the cloud. I take my raw sensor data, I pump it to the cloud. I process it with Hadoop, I reduce the volume of data, and then I take that reduced data set and push it into a traditional data warehouse. So that's a very, very common pattern here. So we add HD Insight, that's going to let us pull some data out of our logs. What do we do with that data once we've got it? Well, one thing we can do is we can just stick it in our data warehouse and put it on the report that we print and give to the CEO every week. I am going to jump the demo because I just know we're tight on time. Right, and you can hit the demos. The demos are largely just looking at some pre-configured solutions again. So I'm going to jump these two demos. One thing we can do with the data is we can start to bring to bear the tools of data science. Right? So data science is moving from business intelligence being backward looking at what has happened, to business intelligence being about taking that history and using it to build models, and using those models to endeavour to predict the future. Anybody done much with sort of predictive analytics? Yeah? Yeah? Great, yeah. So, I mean, the classic scenarios are things like, yeah, basket analysis. Customers who bought this also bought that. Customer churn. Customers who left us, we're a bank. The customers who left look like this. Here's a whole lot of our existing customers who look like that. Send them a free credit card, right? It's those sorts of scenarios. It's called machine learning. It's called predictive analytics. It's been around for a while, you know. So I studied it at university back in the late 1990s. It's just been very hard to get hold of, right? There are really large organisations. They've been using it for years, right? You know, all those credit cards in your pocket, your bank is doing lots of stuff with that data. It's just not been very accessible for smaller organisations to be able to use these tools. Azure Machine Learning is about bringing the tools of data science to a much broader audience. And I think that's probably the best way to describe it. You know, is it the most sophisticated data science toolkit out there? Probably not, but it can deal with R scripts, so you can bring the most sophisticated tools of data science to it. But what it is a very approachable, very accessible way for customers to model and experiment with data, build their models, and then deploy those models as web services into production systems. Because that's the difference between traditional business intelligence, report to the CEO, and machine learning, predictive analytics, where you actually want to take that model and predict what customers might do or what systems might do. So, how's this going to work? We run an email campaign. We determine who are the customers who purchase from that, and we want to try and find similar customers who we could run a similar mail campaign with. Right? Any machine learning scenario is going to follow this sort of process. The first thing we need to do is we need to manipulate our data, right? Usually we're going to filter out records. We're going to do things like take a continuous variable. How much did the customer spend, right? Customer basket spend, and we're going to turn that into a discrete value. $0 to $50, $50 to $100, $100 to $200, $200 or greater. Because many of these machine learning algorithms prefer to deal in classes than to deal with continuous variables. We'll probably split that data set. So we've got a big historical data set. What we'll usually do is we'll take some of that data, and we'll say, okay, 70%, we'll train our model on that portion of the data. 30%, we're going to use that to check that our model is reasonably robust. Right? Now you can get into a whole lot of detail there about how you can sweep through the data and using variable splits, and talk about overtraining. The important thing to realize is if you've got historical data, you don't train your machine learning system on the whole data set. You train it on a subset and validate with the rest. Right? You'll want to identify which features, right, you want to input to your machine learning algorithm. And what you're looking for there are features with as much information as possible. Because almost all of these machine learning approaches work on a thing called information gain. Okay, looking at that feature, how much information gain does it give me? How much does it let me separate different items of data? Great, I've looked at that one. Let me look at the next feature. It's all about information gain. So some of the things you need to consider, you probably don't want highly correlated variables. Right? What would be a good example? The example I gave yesterday is, say, eye color and country of origin, right? Actually, those are quite highly correlated. So you probably want to pick one or the other, right, to feed into your machine learning algorithm. Otherwise, you end up with excess features, and that can be a problem, right? Because one, it's more intensive to process, but two, it means your models are more complex than they need to be. We'll then apply some sort of machine learning algorithm. And again, this greatly simplifies it, but we have two broad classes of machine learning. One we call supervised machine learning. There we have a target. So look at all of my customers, right? And I want to predict what sort of customers will leave the bank. That, and I've got historical data that says this customer left, this customer didn't, this customer left. So I have a target to work with. That's called supervised learning. Unsupervised learning is, here's a whole lot of data. Cluster it, right? So put similar data together. And what you'll usually do with unsupervised learning is you'll cluster the data and then you'll actually get some experts to come and have a look at it and go, okay, I can sort of understand why we might be sort of seeing these groups of customers and why, you know, what's happening here. Probably the best sort of ground floor example of supervised learning is tree-based classification. And that's the example we go through in the demo scenario. So tree-based classification is basically taking your data set and using that idea of information gain. Okay, I've got this data set, I've got these input features. Let me find, to start with, which input feature gives me the biggest information gain, i.e. which input feature lets me distinguish as much as possible. And we'll start with that. Okay, and then once I've done that, let me look for the next feature with the next greatest information gain, and I'll use that. And what I'll do is I'll build a tree that lets me, you know, say, okay, so what we're looking for here are, let's say, customers who buy surfboards. Okay, so the first thing we found out is that customers over 40 years of age are much less likely to buy surfboards than our customers under 40 years of age. All right? And this probably assumes that we have a binary split. Great, okay. The next thing we'll look at is gender, right? Because gender tells us a lot. We can see that men are much more likely to buy surfboards than women for under 40 years of age, right? But actually over here, for older people, the biggest information gain is actually from distance from the ocean. And what you'll do is you'll work through these features building this tree. Now the nice thing about building a tree is twofold. Right. One is I can get a CEO in the room and I can say we've run this massive cluster of machine learning and here's what we came up with. And he goes, that's a flow chart. And we can go, exactly. Doesn't that help you understand your customers better? All right? So this helps chief executives understand machine learning. It's also very easy to implement into a production system. Unsupervised learning, it's similar information gain approaches, but we don't have a target. So we're not looking at the end of this to find buys surfboards, doesn't buy surfboards. Right, we're just looking to cluster similar data. So we run this data through Azure ML, and then we might take the output of that, and we might either export a batch of results, okay, who are we going to go and target with our mail campaign, or we can actually take the model that we produced and go turn that into a web service. And suddenly what we've done is we've trained this model and just turn this model into a web service that we can consume from our application. All right. So again, you know, with all apologies to the Azure ML guys, it's, you know, there are super sophisticated machine learning systems in use in massive organizations around the world. The problem is that there's not that many people using them. Azure machine learning is about bringing predictive analytics to the masses, right? And it brings machine learning to a cloud platform so that we can now deal with huge amounts of data, right? There was a new release today. This platform is becoming more and more sophisticated, right? It's able to execute R scripts. That's a standardized language of machine learning, right? This is going to become a more and more and more important tool, not just in organizations new to machine learning, but in starting to edge out existing tools in organizations where they may run them on premises and now they can run them in the cloud with all of those benefits of elastic scale.